Kia ora and welcome to Amron's Podcast, episode 221. Today is Thursday, June 17, 2010. That means I have done two podcast episodes this week. Woohoo! I think it's been a long time since I've been able to get together two podcast episodes in one week. So it seems that my evil plan to record on Monday actually worked. Now, of course, that means that they were the same amount of parts, same number of days apart, if I'd done Tuesday and Friday as I always used to do. And eventually I might get back to that. But for now, here we are. Today I thought I would talk a little bit about things you miss. And I've talked about it in a roundabout way on other podcasts, other episodes. But I thought I would talk about some odd things today. But first, I have some items from the New Zealand news. First, an update to last time's podcast. Last time? The previous podcast episode. And that is that the punishments have been meted out in the credit card scandal in the parliament. And among other things, the gay MP, Chris Carter, who was the foreign affairs spokesman, has been demoted to conservation spokesman. And in the previous Labour-led government, he started out in government, or in cabinet rather, as conservation minister. But at any rate, he says he quite likes that, and so some of the people are saying, oh, what kind of punishment is that? Whatever. But he also was removed from the front bench, which, as I explained last time, are the senior members of caucus or sit on the front bench. And his ranking was also reduced in the party list. And as you remember, the party list is the order of candidates that who will be elected from the list if they require more MPs than they have elected through electorates. And that's probably far too complicated to get into right now. But the point is, it doesn't matter that much because he's not dropped that much lower than he was. So he would probably be guaranteed of election, even if he lost his electorate seat, which probably isn't all that terribly likely. He, however, was not happy about this arrangement and had a bit of a run-in with the Parliamentary Press Corps, which, from what I saw on television, did look a bit like it was being a bit over the top in pursuing him and demanding answers, demanding an apology and all this sort of thing. And there are probably some people who would have seen that and would have felt a bit of sympathy for him being harassed as he was by the media. However, I did think it was a bit unfortunate when one of the anchors of the One Network News, his name is Simon Dallow, started the report by saying that Chris Carter had thrown a hissy fit. Now, I don't like that phrase, especially in this context, because it can have homophobic overtones. I know that Simon Dallow would not have meant it that way, and I doubt very much that whoever actually wrote the copy thought of it either. They just probably thought of it in, you know, in popular usage. Nevertheless, I do think it was an unfortunate choice of words. He, Chris Carter, has still was maintaining his innocence, which led the leader of the opposition, Phil Goff, who's the leader of the Labour Party, to come down harder on Chris Carter than he might have otherwise. He basically demanded that he issue a public apology for what he did, and was pretty strong in his condemnation. Now, I believe that Chris Carter and Phil Goff have never gotten along very well anyway, so this wouldn't have helped matters any, and maybe Phil Goff wanted to kick him for some reason. However, before anyone attributes overly anti-gay, what's the word, motivation to this, there is this. Phil also promoted four MPs up in the ranks and reassigned the portfolios and so on. Of those four, three of them are gay. So you could argue that he replaced a troublesome gay MP with three far less troublesome gay MPs. His shadow cabinet. I don't know. I mean, that's a matter of some debate. I'm still not convinced that the media didn't pursue Chris Carter a bit more strongly than they would have a heterosexual in a similar situation. However, it is also true that Chris Carter has not made it easy on himself by coming across as being petulant and angry and arrogant even. And none of that helped his case. Had he been a little bit more circumspect, he probably, or possibly anyway, could have ridden this out. Although he'd been blasted before for having charged a lot of travel money to the taxpayer when he was a foreign affairs spokesman. I don't know. It's sort of neither here nor there now because what's done is done. And he has been ordered on stress leave from the caucus to sort of calm down, basically. But also in kind of political news, I found this kind of interesting. The Sikh Council of New Zealand, Sikh, S-I-K-H, you know, the people from India who wear the turbans, and after 9/11 were often thought of as, they're often called terrorists by Americans, whatever. They are going to be taking a case to the Human Rights Tribunal because there's a club. We have a lot of private clubs in New Zealand, and one of them is called the Cosmopolitan Club, and they tend to be in smaller towns, in small cities and things. Well, there's one in, I guess it's technically South Auckland. At any rate, there's this guy there, a Sikh, who was going to attend a function there, a community function, where they were going to be honoring some community achievements. And he was barred entry to the club because they have a policy of no headwear at all, including turbans. And the Sikh community feels that's unfair because they wear their turbans everywhere at all times and they don't ever take them off. The Cosmopolitan Club, for its part, has essentially reaffirmed its policy and it's not looking to change it pretty much unless they're ordered to by the commission. But the irony is that this Sikh man was going to the Cosmopolitan Club because the function that he was about to attend was organized to recognize his contribution to the community. Talk about irony. So if I remember, and if I hear about it, I'll let you know what comes of it. But I would suspect that ultimately the club will change its policy to permit turbans. The Returned Hand Services Association and other groups do allow turbans into their clubs. But this particular Cosmopolitan Club anyway, I don't know, maybe there's more, don't allow them for now. Also in the news, the New Zealand government cut a bunch of programs as part of their budget cuts in order to afford tax cuts for the rich. And one of the programs they cut was this one called Community Max, which was designed to help non-profit groups ease young people into employment by paying for up to 30 hours a week for up to 6 months at the minimum wage. But still, for many of these young people, that was their first job and their first entry into the workforce. Well, there was a non-profit group in South Auckland that employed five transgendered sex workers. They were aged 18 to 24. And they had not been able to find conventional employment. And it is very difficult for transgendered people because very often their documentation doesn't match their gender. For instance, if they're born male, their driver's license will say that they're male and will have a male name and all that sort of stuff. Well, part of what this program did was it assisted them in changing their name by deed poll to a female name. A deed poll is where you go in front of a judge and the judge orders your name changed. And also helped them get new driver's licenses in their new names so that if they went for a job, they would be able to provide identification proving what their name is or verifying what their name is. So it's kind of a unique program. I'm not aware of any other in the country that does that. And the area where this was located is primarily Pacific Island of various sorts. And so that's the primary people it was going to help. Well, that is now gone. And these young transgender ex-sex workers, you have to say that carefully, are left without jobs, without immediate prospects of finding jobs because they haven't finished all the bits and pieces they need to do in only 6 months to basically live full-time in their new gender. And so it's a bit of a difficult problem for them. I would hope that the government will come to the party and find some way to basically help them see out this process. But be that as it may, it is still nevertheless interesting that this program existed at all. And I hope that either this government will eventually decide to, do it right, or that when Labour is next in government that they'll restore something similar because it was very useful. Interestingly, I also found out as part of this that 400 New Zealanders, which is a tenth of 1%, show their gender as X rather than male or female in their passports. 400 to 800 people belong to New Zealand transgender groups. Obviously, they don't know the precise number because those numbers generally aren't public. There was a study conducted by the University of Otago in 2007, and they surveyed 2,307 New Zealand sex workers and found that 6.9% were transgender, which is much higher than the population generally, obviously. Well, not obviously, but it is. And I know that from the transgender people I've known, mostly male to female, when I lived in the U.S., a great number of them either were or had been in sex work at some stage. because this is going back a few years now, obviously. But at the time, it was one of the few things that they could get away with doing. And I put get away in quotes, because it was very difficult for them to find conventional jobs. As I was just talking about, their documentation didn't match their gender identity. And there were a lot of places that wouldn't hire transgender people. In New Zealand, of course, it is illegal to discriminate on the basis of gender or gender identity. Although there is some question as to whether the Human Rights Act really does cover transgender. It covers sexual orientation and it covers gender. There's an opinion from the Law Society that does, in fact, cover gender identity as well, but that hasn't been tested precisely. And there is some thought that the Human Rights Act needs to be amended to specifically cover transgendered people. But nevertheless, this was a program that was working and is now gone. And I think that's a bit of a shame. But now changing gears completely... There are new kiwi fruit varieties on the way. Now, kiwi fruit was descended from Chinese gooseberries through selective breeding and so on. We ended up with what we have now. Now, I have to tell you that there's one thing that Americans do that it really annoys New Zealanders, and that's when they refer to kiwi fruit as kiwi. Because if you eat kiwi, you're either eating our national symbol, a flightless bird, or you're eating a human being. And both of those are probably not a good idea, particularly because the bird is endangered. So please, when you refer to it as kiwi fruit. One word, kiwi fruit. And our national board, or whatever you call it, that sells it, is called Zespri. And I know that in Jewel Osco in Chicago, Jewel specifically, in Chicago, I've seen Zespri brand New Zealand kiwi fruit on sale. And so I'm sure it's available throughout the country. It is, of course, the finest brand of kiwi fruit in the world. And they have now come up with they're now introducing some new varieties. They already introduced a gold variety some time ago. I don't know if that's currently for sale in the U.S. or not. It's a bit milder than the traditional green kiwi fruit. But these new ones are an early season gold, which means that they'll be harvestable sooner than the current gold ones. A long storing gold, which means obviously they could ship farther to, say, Europe and the U.S. And also a sweet green kiwi fruit, because kiwi fruit can sometimes be a bit, not just tart, but also almost sometimes a bit astringent at times, depending on how ripe it is. And so obviously this must be a sweeter variety. They're also working on a red kiwi fruit, which isn't quite ready for the market yet, but they think it will be in 2 to 3 years. So there are new varieties of kiwi fruit coming your way. Do try them. Keep a kiwi employed. Now, I thought I would call today's episode The Things You Miss. And I have talked about this sort of stuff in previous episodes, the things that as an expat that you miss when you move to another country. And, of course, a lot of that sort of stuff is also similar if you just move across country, if you're in a big country like Australia or Canada or the U.S., what have you, because you'd find the same sort of thing in that you would miss regional delicacies. And if your family and friends live on the other side of the country and you don't get to see them, you'll miss them too, all those sorts of things. So that is all very similar. And maybe that might help someone relate to what it's like to be an expat. But I thought today I would actually share some unusual things with you that probably you don't think about. And this all came about the other day because I was on Twitter, as I am every day, and Lord Byron of Illinois posted photos of some chipmunks outside his house. Now, I grew up with chipmunks, of course, and sort of got used to them, but only at one of the houses I lived at outside of Chicago. In Chicago, of course, you never see anything like that. At least I didn't, where I lived. And... but at one of our houses we moved in, and these little chipmunks would come out and they would, go out in the patio and they would have little chipmunk conversations or whatever it is they do. I don't know. And I just thought they were the cutest things. And I'd sort of kind of forgotten about them because we don't have chipmunks in New Zealand. We don't have squirrels either. And I sometimes miss squirrels as well. I was fascinated watching them when I was in Chicago in January, watching them snuffle around looking for things to eat. Yeah. So these are things that are the kinds of things you would never think about in planning a move. New Zealand, by the way, has no native mammals. It has a species of bat, which is now considered indigenous, but all of the mammals in New Zealand were introduced. It was mostly birds up until the arrival of humans, which brought in their mammals. Anyway, one of the photos that Lord Byron posted is actually the show art for this episode. And thank you to his lordship for allowing me to use the photo. But it was sort of a reminder, an unusual reminder, admittedly, of the kinds of things that you just don't think about. Now, I have talked about food before and recently and the various flavors I've missed. And I haven't been back to the American store since because, quite frankly, I think I've decided I don't really like that stuff anymore. I still have I have all but two of the Tootsie Rolls I bought when I went there, for instance, because I'm just not into them anymore. But, I mean, I don't think that has to do with being not liking the American stuff so much as that I just don't like the sweet stuff as much as I used to. But I digress. The point is that there will be unusual things that one may miss, such as squirrels and chipmunks, and also even holidays. Now, I have also talked before about 4th of July and how different it is when you're living in a place that doesn't in any way recognize what you're used to, like the 4th of July. Although, and I probably said this before, but I've forgotten, our first trip back to Chicago was in 1997, and some friends put on a little party so that people could, well, it wasn't so much to welcome me home, it was to meet Nigel. Let's be honest, they wanted to meet him. Everybody likes Nigel better. But anyway, we were talking to one of my friends who is a university-educated person. He actually had a master's degree, and he said, "Do you have the 4th of July in New Zealand?" And I thought he was kidding. And I said, "Of course we do. It's between the 3rd and the 5th. He said, "No, I mean, do they observe it there?" I thought, why? It's America's national holiday, not New Zealand's. It has nothing to do with New Zealand. And there are a number of people who think that, oh, well, maybe other countries do. Well, this might come as a shock to some people, but other countries couldn't care less about the 4th of July. They just couldn't. Although I've seen some retailers from time to time put on a 4th of July sale and they use the Uncle Sam image and say Uncle Sam wants you to save big money or something like that. I don't know. But even that's kind of rare. And you don't see any supermarket displays for 4th of July. I mean, Halloween is as far as it's gone, and that's waning, I think. So you won't see anything about 4th of July. And so, and also, it's the middle of winter here. Well, the start of winter. And so it just feels wrong. It's, you know, I'm used to hot and perhaps muggy summer's day for 4th of July barbecues. And here, it's winter. It could be cold. It could very well be raining. And it's just not the same. And so it's kind of, I don't know. Now, in previous years, we have actually done a barbecue. One year, we did a pretty damn American barbecue, if I do say so. We had our version of hot dogs and hamburgers and all kinds of stuff like that. I don't know if we're going to do anything this year, about which more in a moment, or later, I should say. But it's one of those things that you do realize you miss out on. Now, before, I had posted on my blog about Memorial Day in New Zealand because there were a couple of events, and that is the sort of thing that does happen where expat communities will organize themselves to have a party for a particular thing. There is a group of Democrats abroad here in Auckland that organized election parties to watch the returns, but I mean, as you know, as you remember probably, Nigel and I organized our own. Anyway, the point is that the observance of traditionally American things is done by expats themselves, sometimes with the support of the embassy or the consulate, sometimes with, say, a trade group. There's a New Zealand U.S. consul or something like that, which exists primarily to foster trade relations business relations between the two countries. Those sorts of groups may organize something, but by and large, if you move to another country, you can forget about American holidays. No Memorial Day, no Veterans Day, no July 4th, no Thanksgiving Day, none of that stuff, because it just doesn't exist, and the people there just don't care about it. And why would they? I mean, think about it for a second. Would anybody in the U.S. really care about Waitangi Day? No. They wouldn't care about Australia Day. They wouldn't care about any of that stuff. So it only makes sense. But it's the sort of thing that a lot of people just don't think about until they find themselves overseas and then realize that, you know, one of these most familiar things is now gone, like chipmunks and squirrels. And there are no doubt plenty of other little examples. We don't get some of I would say that in New Zealand anyway, one of the main differences is that we sometimes don't get the access that that people in the U.S. have, because we don't have the economies of scale. We're a small market. There's only 4.3 million people in the country, which is smaller than a whole bunch of the states, individual states. So it's actually smaller than some cities. So we don't get, you know, the huge variety of things. Case in point, something I was thinking of recently, if you go to some home centers in the U.S., you know, like a, I can't even think of the name of them anymore, Home Depot or whatever, you might find an entire section of nothing but compact fluorescent light bulbs and all kinds of different varieties and lightnesses and brightnesses and types like full spectrum daylight and soft white and all that sort of stuff. In New Zealand, you're lucky if you find a little rack with some on them in your, well, home improvement store might have more, but in your local hardware store, or grocery store, or whatever. And generally speaking, they're all soft white. Now, this came up because I used, in my desk lamps actually came with daylight fluorescent tubes in them, compact fluorescents, and one of them burned out immediately. And I replaced them both at the same time with soft white, which is fine, except that it shifts color. And I work with color every day, and I made a mistake on an ad that I created because I didn't realize, I didn't stop to think that the color had shifted. And it, long story short, if I'd had the right bulbs, that, that wouldn't have happened. And I am going to have a bit of a mission finding those bulbs that I need. I'll probably have to go to a specialty store, a specialty lighting store, and pay a lot of money because they're just not available, generally speaking, in your local home center. So it's things like that. It's the access to stuff that is really different. And it's the sort of thing you don't really think about until you miss it. And I know I felt the exact same thing here in New Zealand. When we moved to Pāroa, because we lived there for, what, 3 years, 2 years, two and a bit years. And we had to go, we had to drive 45 minutes to an hour to the next biggest city, the next city of any sort, to buy some things because we couldn't get them locally. And I was used to when we lived, last time we lived here on the shore in Auckland, if we needed something, we could just drive to the store to get it and we'd be done. We knew where to go or the area to go anyway to find what we needed. And there were a lot of different stores selling the same stuff, so there was a lot of choice. Well, that's just not true in small towns. And in this sense anyway, New Zealand is analogous to a small town next to the big town of the U.S. So, you know, those are just some unusual sorts of things that you don't tend to think about the implications of being an expat in a place like New Zealand. A larger country will have other opportunities that we don't have, obviously. Australia is bigger than us. Britain is bigger than both of us combined. But if you move to a smaller country, chances are good that you're going to find things that you miss. And if you move to any country, there are going to be a lot of things you miss, like holidays and chipmunks. So this is, yeah, I just thought I would share that because it was on my mind today because of that, or this week rather, because of that photo from Lord Byron. And now I'm going to go over to comments. And this is all to my previous episode, 220, Getting Things Done. And the first comment was from Roger Green, who said, "My favorite porn titles tend to be parodies of actual films such as these." And he provides a link. And I have to say that, that's probably was probably the way I felt too. And I actually went to, when I worked for a company that published a paper that had ads for porn movies in it, I used to laugh at the things that they came up with. And of course, the one I mentioned in a previous podcast was Itty Bitty Bang Bang, which was a film made up of little people. And yeah. But anyway. And Roger Green also said, "Actually, my greater concern about everything going paperless is the very real possibility that the infrastructure can be compromised by a cyber war attack. This was just rerun on 60 Minutes this past weekend." And this is quote or whatever. "Could foreign hackers get into the computer systems that run crucial elements of the world's infrastructure, such as the power grids, waterworks, or even the nation's military arsenal to create havoc? They already have." And he provides a link to that as well. And thank you, Roger. And you're absolutely right. That is a risk. And what I also think about is a risk is not just the risk from cyber terrorism, which is always real and always present, and we've already seen it, but also the fact that if everything goes electronic, what happens if that computer blows up, literally or figuratively? The information can be lost. And, you know, we already all know what happens if we accidentally delete an email. Well, imagine that if it's everything you've ever written or every photo you've ever taken or whatever, and it's only stored in that one place. Now, granted, we'd be stupid to do that, but people do stupid things or they get lazy or what have you. So, you know, then what? And that is my concern even more than terrorism, cyber terrorism, because I think that we will continue to evolve new ways of protecting things, and I suppose we'll eventually evolve new ways of protecting it as well, protecting data as well. But until we get to that point, it is a bit of a risk, and it's, I think, one that people don't think about too much. And next up was Archer, who said, as much as I'm up on everything technology, especially if it's from Apple, I don't pay any of my bills online. The boyfriend has had several issues with paying online, and I've heard other issues too, so I just stick with my checkbook and stamps. I do, however, get my pay direct deposited. Thank you, Archer. And when I lived, and as I said last time, I think it was last time, when I lived in Chicago, I did try paying things electronically, and that was a disaster. Why should they get the benefit of the 5-day float instead of me? And I also did not have my check direct deposited because it took 3 to 5 days for it to be the money to be available. And because I was living in less than paycheck to paycheck, I could not wait for that to happen. In New Zealand, as I said, as far as I know, nobody gets a paycheck anymore. And all of my pay has always been direct deposited. But we do pay all of our bills electronically, either directly or by direct debit, which is a prearranged thing. And we've never had a problem yet. Now, a lot of people I know in the U.S. in particular are suspicious of these electronic arrangements. And my advice to that would be, first of all, to always check your statement against what ultimately comes out. The problem is that if they continue to make mistakes, then obviously that breeds the sort of mistrust that Archer's talking about. And it becomes the burden comes on you to fix it. And let's face it, companies aren't too speedy about giving your money back if you overpay. They're real quick to chase you if you underpay, but not so eager to give the money back. And here in New Zealand, we don't have as much problem with that, it seems. I can't think off the top of my head of anybody I've heard complaining about incorrect direct debit amounts or what have you. It seems to be pretty stable and pretty realistic. And I mean, part of it, I think, is that, I'll be honest, I think part of it is that New Zealanders are more trusting than Americans, and maybe more trusting than they should be sometimes. But it seems to be working. As I said, can't recall a single time I've ever heard somebody complain about an incorrect transaction or an incorrect amount. So, you know, something must be going right, I guess. I don't know. Now, I said before I would get back to 4th of July, and this is only sort of a roundabout. I mentioned in the past that I was going to be going to a student conference in Christchurch the first weekend in July. That is now off. The gist of it is that they basically took too long to get back to me to make arrangements. It was getting close, and I just didn't really have enough time to make the flight arrangements and hotel and all that, and I just decided, no, I'm just going to not do it. And so that's what happened. It certainly was no animosity or anything, and it's just that I need to plan a bit farther ahead for something like that than last minute, and so ultimately I couldn't go. Now, there may be other opportunities in the future. I may have another opportunity to visit Christchurch. I hope to. As I've said before, we've got friends in the top of the South Island, and I'd dearly love to go visit them. But we haven't been able to arrange that either, or Wellington even. So, but we are planning to do a little bit more traveling around the country. So, hey, you never know. But that's it for today, and that is it for this week. I don't know if I'm going to have time to join Archer's group show this week. Jason and I have just recorded a new political, and as soon as I get it edited, I'll be posting that as well. And that's it. I'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's ARTHUR, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.